The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. So we bask in glorious sunshine and we bask in the glory of Shane Lowry's win of the Open. It used to be the British Open, wasn't it? Now it's the Open. Well, I was reduced to tears. I never thought I'd be reduced to tears watching a game of golf, but I was, and that's the appeal of Shane Lowry, isn't it? He pulls you in, and you want him to win. You just want him to win. I've never met the man. I met his brother once. I don't know him from Adam, but I really wanted him to win. And the relationship between himself and the caddy, were you watching that? It was a bromance. His name is Bo. But the body language and how close they were to each other when they were chatting to each other and they were just staring into each other's eyes. It was just a beautiful thing. And then when he won and he had the claret jug and he went up to make his acceptance speech, I'd cried already at this stage. And then he goes to mention his family, and it's what he doesn't say. What he doesn't say is what got me, not what he's, well, what he said as well, but the pause. Listen for it.
My family, what can I say? My mum and dad. They sacrificed so much for me when I was younger, and I'm so happy that I can hand them this trophy tonight. My wife and my little girl, Iris, to have them here today is just extra special. I don't know what to say.
There you go, part of Shane Lowry's acceptance speech from yesterday. And we'll be talking to Padraig Harrington, who knows what it's like to win an Open. In fact, he knows what it's like to win an Open twice. And we'll be talking to him about how Shane Lowry would be feeling today and what advice he'd give him for the next couple of days and weeks, because there are people going to be pulling at him here, there and everywhere, wanting a bit of him, asking him questions, looking for interviews, all sorts of things. So we'll be talking to Padraig Harrington about that and looking forward to it. Humble is the word to describe Shane, says that person, to 51551, text to 51551 or ray@rte.ie. That's ray@rte.ie. On the day that's in it, with temperatures of up to 26 degrees, it is timely that we talk about the 50 great Irish beaches. It was in the Sunday Times yesterday, and they go right around the coast and mention the best 50 beaches in Ireland. I think I've been on around 25 to 30 of them, which is a good going. I wonder if anybody's been on all 50. I'm looking at them there. Around Dublin, Sea Point is mentioned, Port Marnock is mentioned, then up in County Louth, Clogherhead. I've never been on Clogherhead Beach. But I have been on Dunmore Strand yesterday. I've been on Rosslare Beach as well. I've been there. Curraghclove, been there. Garrettstown, County Cork, definitely. Inchdonny, one of the most beautiful places, not only in Ireland, but in the world. Barleycove was there in County Cork, down near Allahies. That's a beautiful beach. Inch is another great beach. It's like a huge, I don't know if you've ever been on Inch, but people actually go to Inch and never get out of their cars. I've been there. They drive a good bit down the beach, park it so they're facing out to the sea, and just sit there. Mary and John, they read the Sunday papers. Then when they're home that evening, the children call around and go, "What'd you do today, Mum and Dad?" "Oh, we went to Inch Beach." So we did. They never got sand on their feet, but they were on Inch Beach. It's not like a big car park. Mara Beg and Brandon, I think Kerry has more great beaches per square foot than any other county. And there's Finnet as well. That's a lovely beach. It's very sheltered, great place to swim. Ballybunion is there. Then you go up to Lahinch and Kilkee and County Clare, Salt Hill in Galway, and then Strand Hill up there in Sligo. And I'm just looking, Kiel, and I've been there. Kiel, yeah, Kiel. Donegal has some great beaches. Port Salon, I remember it was in voted one of the top five beaches in the world. Rosnaula, there's another one you can drive your car onto. Many's the person learned to drive on Rosnaula Beach. Port Salon is there. And then it goes County Antrim as well. I've been to Ballycastle, I have, yeah. White Rocks Beach, don't know that one. East and West Strand in Portrush. Well, we saw it yesterday. We haven't been on it, but you saw it there in those lovely pictures coming from the Open. They're all there if you want to check out Ireland's 50 great beaches from the Sunday Times yesterday. Now, I don't know if you know this, but I met my wife, Jenny, the lovely Jenny Kelly, at work. Seemingly, the phenomenon of people hooking up at work is becoming a thing of the past. 25 years ago, when surveyed, 1 in 5 people said they met through work. Now it's down to 10%, 1 in 10. Why? Well, they reckon 2 things are responsible. Firstly, the Me Too movement, where people are very reluctant to involve in flirtatious behaviour in the workplace, in case they'll be hauled up in front of some sort of tribunal or something like that. And secondly, the proliferation of apps like Tinder. So people don't need to look around the workplace to find their mate. They can go onto Tinder. So that's an interesting one. It's a real scientific research from Stanford University. Being accused of chatting someone up in the workplace is seen as a more creepy thing now. Even in the past, it would be seen as quite normal. And that's why, one of the reasons why people aren't hooking up anymore. Did you meet your loved one at work? Is it happy ever after? I remember interviewing Rory O'Neill, the old panty, about when he was coming out to his parents. And I can't remember if he came out to his mum or his dad, but he said he did it in a car journey down to Galway City. And I see UK broadcaster Jeremy Vine has revealed that he only chats to his teenage daughters while driving because they're more comfortable that way. I remember talking to Rory, and this has been cited in loads of different places, that when you're driving, you have to look forward. So that uncomfortable situation where you're looking into somebody's eyes as you're talking about something difficult doesn't exist because both of you are looking forward. And that's why having the chats, the serious, uncomfortable chats with your teenage daughter or with your parents in the car is a good thing to do. That's interesting, isn't it? E-cigarettes, did you see that over the weekend? Speed-up ban on e-cigarette sales to kids, doctors urge government. Laws banning the sale of e-cigarettes to children must be speeded up as evidence emerges that more young people are taking up vaping, doctors have warned. The next budget also should impose a rise of at least €1 on the price of a traditional pack of 20 cigarettes, they say. The jury is still out. The scientific jury is still out on e-cigarettes. Some studies show that it has helped people to wean off traditional cigarette smoking. And then in the States, they're saying that e-cigarettes are a gateway to smoking. And there's billboards all over Dublin. I Blue Do You. Have you seen them? They're for a vaping company called Blue, B-L-U. And I went on to their website, and they're definitely trying to attract young people. I'm just looking at the pictures here. Our values, it says, we see change as a good thing and overturn tradition and process with progress. And there's a picture of a lovely girl, probably in her early 20s. Our mission, at Blue, we work to make better products, but more importantly, better lifestyles. We're just like you in that we want a vaping experience that works for us. And then again, it's a young girl, probably 18, 19, 20. So they know where their market is. They're going after people who don't traditionally smoke, but might see vaping as a glamorous thing to do. And of course, that's the way smoking was sold back in the 50s and 60s, wasn't it? You had all these very glamorous, beautiful women, and in Hollywood as well, smoking and then blowing the smoke, looking very sexy and seductive. And that's the way it was sold to other people. And it looks like they're doing the same with vaping. But as I say, the jury's out. We must talk to somebody about that. I see Dr. Des Cox is mentioned in that article. He's chairperson of the Royal College of Physicians. So we might put in a call to him and see if he'll talk to us about that this week. 51551 ray@rte.ie. It's a rainy, dreary Monday here in Cork. Please stop talking about the good weather. Oh, sorry about that. It's nice in Dublin. Los Lobos and La Bamba on RTÉ Radio 1, 51551 ray@rte.ie. Amazing to see a local athlete compete and win on a world stage. It's all started, of course, with a close-knit local community in Clara, says that person. And Desmond Dolman says, Shane Lowry Ray, an ordinary man playing, as he says, an ordinary game that's there for all, but with an extraordinary attitude in extraordinary circumstances. It just makes it so much better that he won on his home soil. Brilliant, says Des. And Sean says, I've been playing golf now for a good number of years and seeing Shane winning yesterday and the scenes on the 18th green and around it, it has to be the best Irish sporting moment ever. Never experienced anything like it at a sports event, and I count myself so lucky to have been there yesterday to witness it. Like you, I bawled my eyes out with immense sense of pride for an Irish man to win a British Open on Irish soil. Just unbelievable. Irish golf is on the crest of a wave. Congrats, Shane. You absolute legend, says Sean. 515-51-RAID-RTE.ie, and we'll be talking to another golfing legend after this. Yes, Padraig Harrington, after the break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon to Padraig Harrington. How are you doing, Padraig?
Yeah, rather good, actually.
Yeah. So, what does it mean to people like you, Shane Lowry's win yesterday?
Well, there's two sides to it for me. I'm obviously a friend of Shane, so I'm thrilled for him. It's validation for a golf career. Once you get out and tour and win a tournament, the next thing is you're trying to win the big tournaments, you're trying to win a major. If you win a major, it defines your career forever. Your name goes a trophy, and you know the Open Championship is going to be played for hundreds of years' time. As long as there's a world here, we'll be playing golf. So his name is there forever, and that brings a huge sense of satisfaction. A lot of pressure in the moment now going forward, but it brings a sense of huge sense of satisfaction, you know, down the road.
Yeah.
But I'm also selfishly thinking it's really good for golf. You know, we haven't won a major in 5 years. For Shane to come out and do it, it's the next step. It's just a nice... We're on a great run for golf in Ireland, big time.
You were there at the end. He went over, he gave you a big hug. You had a big smile on your face. What was going through your head? Because he had a one at that stage. I suppose the last three or four holes, it was his to lose.
Yeah, you know, I actually was heading home on Saturday, and when he started playing very well, I stayed. I didn't go to the golf course on Sunday. I didn't turn up and wish him well. I sent him a text because I didn't want to get in his head in any shape or form. But I sat and watched it all day, went to the players and watched it. And by the last couple of holes, I think the only people who were nervous were people who cared whether Shane won. I think, he had it won. It was just... we didn't want to mess it up.
We've talked before on numerous occasions about, you know, in the head and the psychology of golf, and you've read about it a lot, and you've talked about it a lot. A lot has been made today of the relationship with his new caddy, Brian Beau Martin. How important is that relationship, the golfer and the caddy?
Yeah, the caddy is exceptionally important. And, you know, his old caddy Dermo was a brilliant caddy too, but you know, Brian, you bring somebody in new, fresh, it can be a change of pace, and you know, undoubtedly what he says and does has a huge impact on how a player feels and plays. You know, he's the guy out there for 4 or 5 hours which every day and longer. So it is very important that you have somebody that's not just knows what he's doing, but you're comfortable around, and you know, there has to be a nice, relaxed atmosphere. You know, that's got to be a good friend on the bag. We've seen that. He's got to be the actual job of caddying and doing yardages and listen. That's, you know, anybody can do that. It's the psychology side of caddying is the importance now, and that psychology can be everything from saying the right thing at the right time to not saying anything at another time, and just being calm and relaxed and in a nice place as you go around the golf course with your player.
When you, like, because you won it in 2007 and 2008, and in 2016, Shane was going into the final round of the US Open with a 4-shot lead, similar to yesterday, and of course, that didn't go well for him. So is that the psychology of it, trying not to go back there?
No, that was a big help to him.
Was it? Okay.
Oh, absolutely. You know, sometimes you've got to make your own mistakes. I know when he was going into that US Open, I was texting him constantly, just trying to get in his head about how he was going to feel on that Sunday and what he needed to think about. But, you know, and I could, everything played out the way I thought it would in Oakmont. And, you know, Shane had a chance in that back nine, but was... felt he'd lost it, and then he had 2 3-putts, and it was the 2 3-putts after he thought he'd lost it that actually cost him winning. And from my experience, I could see that happening. But you can tell a fella these things. You can, you know, yes, it helps and you can read it, but there's nothing like getting your own experience. You know, you just sometimes you have to learn something for yourself. And Shane learned that at Oakmont. You know, and he's learning as he goes along, as we all have to do. I think the better a player you are, the more you have to learn these things. I think sometimes another player can come out and win out of the blue or win something big, but, you know, is it sustainable? I don't think. I think with Shane, he's had a bit of pain on the golf course, and that makes him all the more, makes him stronger going forward.
What will he be feeling today? Like, because a lot of people, he said yesterday it was like an out-of-body experience, you know, a sort of surreal thing. Can you remember back to 2007 and the morning after, the day before? How was it?
You'll feel like that for weeks.
Do you?
It would be exceptionally busy for the next number of weeks, because every time you meet somebody, it's a new experience for that person who's meeting them. So whether it's a player, a caddy, an official, whether it's a fan, they'll all want to say their piece to them. So it's continuously exciting, and I would say to take that and enjoy it. You know that, you know, it doesn't, these winning majors don't happen as often as you would like it to happen. So if it takes them a month to enjoy this, that's what you should do. There's plenty of time going forward. Now, going forward, winning a major brings a lot of expectations, a lot of pressure. So it's a different animal for him now, you know, this time next year with expectations, because it doesn't matter how well he plays going forward, he ain't going to win them all the time. You know, that's been proved with everybody. You know, you get a run and you win some, and then it's kind of tough. So, you know, there's lots of sides to this going forward, but at the moment, he should just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Really take it in and make the most of it, because why would you win if you're not going to enjoy it?
Yeah, he looks like a man who will enjoy it. He'll have to do well to beat your record of winning two in a row. He'll have to win it next year and the year after.
Well, he's in position to do it. He can do it. Yes. He's got to win one to win
that's,
two.
That's it. And two to win three.
Yeah.
So, right, you're heading off out of the country. Is it pleasure or golfing, or what are you doing?
I'm off to the next tournament.
All right.
I'm off to San Francisco at the moment. I play in Reno this week in the Barracuda Championship of the PGA Tour. It moves on very quickly for players when you're playing. And that's what I'm saying about Shane. Shane has probably pulled out this week. I'm sure he's pulled out this week. You know, as a player, when you're doing your thing, it just moves quickly. So when you do get a win, that's the time to stop and take stock. It's not the time to say, to double down and start, you know, oh, I'm going to get up tomorrow and practice. No, it's the time to relax and tell your brain, right, I've got there, I've done it.
Yeah.
I'm going to enjoy this for a few weeks. You know, the one thing Shane has is plenty of time. He's still a young man. You know, he's got plenty of good years of playing ahead of him, and plenty more chances now to win. We were discussing it last night that, you know, we both have on to our 60. He's got 27 years of playing in the Open, exemption-wise, after winning yesterday.
Isn't it? And it's just amazing for Irish golf. Like, you know, four Irish golfers and five wins in, what, 12 years? It's just amazing.
It's remarkable.
Yeah.
It really is. You know, as I said, we had won one 57, and, you know, when I won in 2007, and you know, the guys who went just before me didn't even think it was possible. I only won one because I didn't really... I played like a guy with blinkers. I didn't really think, well, an Irish guy hasn't won one, so you can't win one. I just played. So,
yeah.
And it certainly seemed to be the... broke that... the film on it, or whatever you want to describe it. And, you know, guys have followed since, and it's, you know, I would expect if there was any young lad in Ireland, you know, and he's playing sports, if he takes up golf and becomes the number one golfer in Ireland, it literally means he could be the best player in the world and win major championships, which there's not many sports we could do that in Ireland.
You're going to be having conversations, I'd imagine, over the coming days about Shane Lowry and his win. Here's a bit of information that might help you out. He's the first bearded golfer to win the British Open since 1882, when Bob Ferguson, a Scotman, won it with a beard. So
isn't that a tremendous stat? That sums up stats.
There you go. Listen, Patrick, thanks so much for taking our call. Always good to talk
to you.
You're
welcome, Ray.
Yeah, see
Thank
you now.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
ray@rte.ie. Now, our next guest is Renee Van Medding, or even Von Medding. And Renee took to Facebook and Instagram over the weekend. She put a picture of her, one of her child's birth certs, her hand with a wedding ring on it. And she said, "I had to go to our solicitor during the week where I was forced to sign an affidavit stating that I was the sole parent and only adult responsible for our baby Aria, which is a lie. Aria has two parents, though only one of them is legally recognised." And Renee joins us in studio to talk about that. Afternoon, Renee.
Hello.
Oh. This is a very complicated area, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I suppose we've been lauded all over the world because we were the first country to introduce same-sex marriages back in 2015.
Yeah.
And that was a big day.
Yeah.
But the legislation around that hasn't really caught up with that vote, has it?
No, not at all. I guess people assume, if you talk to anyone and you say, do we have full equality in Ireland? People just assume we have marriage equality, therefore we have everything that goes along with a traditional marriage. And sadly, that's not the case.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's get you and Ava and Aria and Audrey, your wife's story. Okay.
Yeah.
When did you and Audrey meet?
We're coming up on 11 years. Yeah. So we met in college. We were both doing theatre and we started dating. So that's, 11 years. And we always wanted kids. We always knew we would have kids. It just was a matter of when and how. Back in 2015 when we knew that marriage equality was coming in and we had gotten engaged and we thought then would be the perfect time to start a family.
So, was that a big day? Just talk us through what that was like for you. And
when
Audrey.
It was actually passed?
Yeah.
It was massive because before that happened, like in the years prior to that, we had always said we would never get married if we couldn't do it in our own country. And then when it came in, it was just huge because we didn't necessarily think that we'd ever get that opportunity.
Hmm.
So it was beautiful, yeah. And we had a gorgeous wedding and just surrounded by so much love. Smock Alley, we were the first same-sex couple to marry in there.
Right.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah. When was that?
It was actually, by the time we got around to it, it was early 2016. And by that time, I was 5 months pregnant with Ava, our first daughter.
Right.
So it was beautiful, yeah.
So when you and Audrey were considering having children, are there numerous different options? What are the options available to you as a same-sex
as
couple?
As a same-sex female couple, the options available would be traditional IVF with your own eggs and donor sperm. You could do a reciprocal IVF, which is what we did, where we used my wife's eggs and donor sperm and I carried the pregnancies.
Uh-huh.
Or you could do an at-home insemination. And obviously you can adopt and various other options as
okay.
well.
Which of those options are legal
available
in this country? Legal
now, it's
available.
It's not really a question of legal because nothing is illegal here, but just there is not legislation to cover some of the options. So reciprocal IVF, what we did, is not legislated for in Ireland. So we weren't able to do it here.
So it's not legislated for and it's not available?
It's not available. So Okay. It's not illegal. It's you just can't do it.
What's the difference between that?
It's not like you're going to be prosecuted for it, but it's just not
available.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happens was Audrey provided the egg.
Yeah.
Then was it a
donor sperm.
Yeah. Yeah. Anonymous or?
It actually was anonymous, which would not have been our preference, but because we went to Spain, that's the only option.
Uh-huh.
You know, in each country, they have different laws surrounding assisted human reproduction. And in Spain, the only option for donor sperm is anonymous,
okay.
unfortunately.
So then the embryo, the gamete produced by Audrey's egg and the sperm then was implanted in your womb.
Yep.
And you carried Ava to full term.
Yeah, so I'm
so you're a surrogate mother in...
The term surrogate is kind of defined by a person who carries a pregnancy with no intention of becoming a parent.
Right, okay, yes.
So,
Yeah.
I would be classed as the birth or the gestational parent.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, and Audrey would be the biological parent.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ava is what age now?
So Ava is almost 3 and her sister Aria is 6 months old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was it like, the birth of Ava?
How do you explain having a child? You know, it's just...
To a man.
But it's just to anyone, you know, the experience of having a child is absolutely mind-blowing.
Mm.
The absolute best thing that you could ever do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So both Ava and Aria were conceived in Spain.
Actually, one was conceived in Spain, one was conceived in Portugal.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
But both in that area. Yeah.
Both in that area. Yeah. The cost is. Why did you pick Spain?
It's massive. The cost. Well, when we initially went to a fertility clinic in Ireland, and they were very sympathetic, and they really wanted to do this for us, but they said their hands were tied, and they said, if you really want to go down this route, we would suggest going to the UK or somewhere like Spain, because it's they do it constantly. You know, it's a very, very popular form of IVF for female couples. So when they had said that, we looked into the UK as well, but the cost was just astronomical there. So we decided to go to a nicer, warmer climate and have a you know, just a relaxing, nice time, and kind of make a holiday out of it as well. So we spent a month both times for both babies. We spent a month.
So when a heterosexual couple are having IVF, the woman has to go through all sorts of hormone treatments. Yep. So that was you.
It was actually both of us because we split the process. Yes. So really, reciprocal IVF is a traditional IVF cycle, but it's split between two women.
Ah, yeah.
So she would do all of the hormone treatment for the egg production, and then I would do all the hormone treatment to prepare my body
to make sure
ready.
The embryo implants on the walls.
It's really nice because it's shared, you know, and you're both kind of going through the hormone treatment, because it's really tough.
Okay.
Yeah.
So happy families.
Yeah.
Until Irish law comes into it.
Yeah. So it was, we just very naively, I suppose, assumed after marriage equality and once we were married, I was pregnant. We just assumed that once our daughter was born, we would both have rights. We didn't know how that would look, but we just assumed, well, surely we're married and we have equality. And it was only about a month before she was born that we realized that actually once she was born, I would be named as the sole parent and Audrey would have zero rights to her.
Okay.
Like nothing, as much as you would have.
Because you gave birth to her.
Because I gave birth. So under Irish law, the person who gives birth is considered the biological and birth parent, regardless of whose eggs, anything, regardless of whether you're married. It doesn't matter. The person who gives birth is on paper.
And if you discuss this in a very cold, callous way, Audrey, her genetic makeup, well, Ava has half of...
Yeah.
Of Audrey's genetic makeup.
Yeah.
None of yours.
No.
Although you carried her.
Yeah, she has my blood.
Yes. Genetically, yes.
Yeah.
And yet Irish law doesn't recognise any relationship whatsoever between Ava and Audrey.
No, nothing. No.
So when it comes to getting a birth cert then, which is, I remember getting birth certs for our children, and it's a joyous day. It's sort of saying, you know, you exist in the world.
Yeah, and I talked to so many people about this, and for most people, it's one of the happiest days of their life. And for us, the both times we had to do it for both of our daughters was two of the worst days of our lives, because you're going in there and, you know, one of you is just, it's like you're nothing, you know? It's heartbreaking and it's not fair for them.
No.
Because they have two parents. They have two people who equally...
So just talk us through what appears on Ava and Aria's birth certs.
So if anyone has seen a birth cert, on the left-hand side is usually the mother's information, on the right-hand side is the father's information. So on both of the girls' birth certs, it has my information on the left-hand side and then just a gaping blank space on the right-hand side with nothing. And it's quite ironic, actually, because, you know, a lot of people have, you know, a lot of haters on social media. And the thing that a lot of people say to me is, oh, well, you know, you can't mess with a birth cert. A birth cert is a certificate of biology.
It's a legal document.
Well, no, it's, you know, it's, it reflects, you know, a child is, you know, a right to their biological information, which I absolutely agree with. But the funny thing is that at the moment, their birth certs don't have any correct biological information, because there's nothing from the donor and then my information, but I'm not actually their biological parent.
No.
So they actually have nothing on the birth certificate that's correct at the moment.
And you have this ludicrous situation where you are married in the eyes of the law, have given birth to two children, and only one of you is recognised as a parent.
Yeah. It just
so are you recognised as a single parent or as a sole parent? Sole parent.
I am, but do you think that would apply to claiming as a sole parent? Absolutely not. You know, some people have said, you know, hit them where it hurts.
Yes,
and claim
financially,
claim as a sole parent. And trust me, we have tried, along with a lot of other people, just to see if that would kind of do anything. And
So the world is changing at pace, and yet legislation in Ireland is ridiculously slow.
Yeah.
They introduced legislation in the UK about this sort of thing as far back as 1979.
Yeah.
Ireland got all the best medical and legal minds together, and they came up with a report on assisted human reproduction in 2005, which is nearly 15 years ago. Nothing, still a sort of this vacuum, this legal vacuum.
And sure, even up in the North recognises both parents. I know they don't have marriage equality, but they recognise both parents up in the North.
Okay. You know? What options are open to you now? What do they say you could do?
So at the
guardianship
moment, so guardianship is only available after you've lived with a child for 2 years,
right,
which is so bizarre. So you have to live with your own child for 2 years before you're eligible.
Well, Ava, you could apply. She could
apply for Ava.
Audrey could apply
can't
for guardianship
apply for the baby.
For Aria. No.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one option.
Yep.
Adoption?
No. Tuslev said that their resources, that's not what they're for. You know, they are there for people to adopt children who were not necessarily born to them. So this is, I suppose, this particular situation is not what they're there for, is what we've been told. So no, that's not available to us. Because if we had to do that, we absolutely would do that. Because it's not about what should be rightfully ours or anything. It's purely about protecting our children.
Yes.
So if we had to do that, we would, but we're not able to.
And they state that in everything. It's about, I'm just looking at a statement here from the Department of Health, and the last line is, overall, the aim of developing legislation in this area is to promote and ensure the health and safety of parents, others involved in the process, such as donors and surrogate mothers, and most importantly, the children who will be born as a result of AHR. So the children, are hugely important.
And it should be.
In the horrible, tragic, unthinkable event that you were to die.
Yeah. Our children would be orphaned. Legally orphaned, yeah. And we don't know what would happen to them. You know, you can put it in a will. You know, we've done all of that. But that's not set in stone, you know. Things like that can always be contested. A will or a guardianship, that's not parentage.
Yeah. I think all politicians accept that we live in a world where there are all sorts of families, all sorts of permutations.
Yeah.
And yet they've failed to legislate for them.
Yeah.
Have you spoken to any politicians?
So the one politician who's actually been really great with engaging with us is Regina Doherty, you know, the Minister for Social Protection. And we had a meeting with her in the last month, and she's very sympathetic to our situation, and I know she wants to see the change happen. But the sense we're getting is that it's going to be a very long time at the rate it's going. So I suppose that's why we started the petition, just to try and get some, you know, people power behind us, because it seems like when it's such a small group of people that are affected, that, you know, there's not enough people shouting loud enough for them to actually take notice and allocate the resources.
Renee, there aren't enough votes in it.
I know.
No, there aren't enough votes in it, so they're unlikely to do anything.
Yeah.
Why do you think it has taken so long? Is it because there are no votes in it, or is it because it's so complicated? Or
I think it's a very complicated situation, because there are so many family types, and there are so many ways of conception, and so many, you know, different things that they have to look at. But I really think it's just the lack of resources being channeled into that area.
What's the best country? What would be the best country in the world to do what you and Audrey did? I know Canada's quite good,
yeah,
isn't it?
I would definitely say, I was about to say the US, but like, I... But it is actually a great place in most states for same-sex or LGBTQ parents, but definitely Canada. I have quite a few people I know from Canada, and it's just an automatic right. You know, two people decide to have a child in whatever way, whatever their gender, whatever their sex, and they're both considered parents from the word go.
Yeah. Is it that sometimes you need to make a huge leap forward and then other things need to catch up? I'm thinking same-sex marriage was a huge leap forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, in order to get things done, you have to do that. And then you pay catch-up then, and that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, I guess, in a sense, there is kind of playing catch-up. And yes, every step forward is a positive thing. But at the same time, we cannot wait for another 10 years, another 15 years to catch up. You know, this needs to be done now. Our children are growing rapidly. in an unsafe situation.
It's worrying as well. In all the stuff I've read this morning about it, it does mention donor-assisted human reproduction procedures carried out in the state.
Yeah, so that's one of the massive issues I have. So I don't think we had said that there is actually some legislation that's been put in place, and it was passed in 2015, and it just hasn't been commenced yet. Mm. So, you know, it's been a long time.
The Children and Family Relationships Act 2015.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was passed. And the way that they drafted this legislation is that it's only going to apply to female couples who have done fertility treatment in an Irish clinic. And it's going to exclude every other family type. So that means if you've gone abroad for fertility treatment, if you've done reciprocal IVF, if you've done an at-home insemination.
But hold on. You've told us that you can't do it in Ireland.
Yes, but they've also specifically excluded that reciprocal IVF. They've written that into the legislation that even if that were to come into, it still won't be covered by this legislation.
Okay. Okay.
So they're specifically excluding that, as well as excluding people going abroad for a traditional IVF cycle.
I wonder, is there any information, statistics on the number of same-sex couples?
I don't think there's, there hasn't been an official report. Again, because, the numbers are small compared to a lot of other kind of communities.
But you would imagine with, it's 4 years on now from the referendum that more and more people will be opting to have children.
Absolutely. It's growing all the time. There's at least hundreds, thousands, it might not be hundreds of thousands yet, but, it's growing all the time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't realise that this is actually an issue. A lot of people who are planning to have kids don't realize that it's an issue until they're in that situation, which is heartbreaking, to kind of have gone through so much to get pregnant or to have a child and then to find out that.
So failing our politicians introducing legislation, what would you and Audrey do?
We're going to just keep pushing, and, it might be a case of, litigation against
the state.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because.
Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that our kids are protected.
Yeah.
Again, it's not about us. We don't need that piece of paper to recognise us.
Isn't it terrible, though, that you would have to be pushed to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That they'll only do something about it if it goes to the European Court of Human Rights.
Yeah, it's
like
terrible.
That.
And, I don't think there's any person in government who is necessarily, stopping us. I don't think, it's a...
There's no malice.
No, I don't think so. I just think it's a lack of action. But, that lack of action equals... discrimination,
Children are not commodities, and not every person has a right to have one. Legislators should move slowly, says Marge. And biology and the laws of nature, every child must have a father male and a mother female, says Cahill in Limerick.
Well, we get a lot of that.
How do you react to that? You would have thought that things have moved on, wouldn't you?
Do you know what? My kind of new philosophy, I suppose, in the past, I'd kind of get dragged down by comments like that. And, those comments are whatever. There's a lot worse that I hear. But now what I do is when I get comments that are just not positive in any way, I just ignore them because there's no point in arguing with someone like that. You're not going to change minds. Mm-hmm. What I do is... I will engage with people who genuinely are asking a question or want to learn, if I think something positive can be gained by, coming back to them with something. But with the really nasty comments, I just let it go because it says a lot more about the poster than it does about me. It says nothing about me and everything about them.
Best of luck to Renee and Audrey with their quest. Met them both when Renee was in Wexford Light Opera Society's production of Follies several years ago. Pat Lawler all the WLOS crew. Wonderful story, Ray, happy families, and it's a lovely story. There are three people involved who should all be named on the birth cert, including Dad, says Catherine. And would you have preferred...
So the thing, yes, we would have preferred that, but I will just say it's not Dad, it's donor. It is absolutely donor. If you look at a heterosexual couple who... go through IVF treatment and use either donor sperm or donor egg due to fertility issue, that donor is not considered dad or mum, ever.
No.
That's not even a question. So a donor, again, by definition, is someone who has donated genetic material in order for someone else to become a parent. But they are not a parent.
Yes, and increasingly countries are not allowing anonymous donors.
Absolutely, yes. And that's a really positive thing because yes. I do 100% think that children should be allowed access to their biological information where it is at all possible.
And do Ava and Aria have the same donor?
No.
And can I ask you, this is quite a personal question. Why was it decided that you would carry and Audrey would donate?
Just purely because it made sense for us. Okay. I wanted to be pregnant, you know, and it just was, it just always made sense for us. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This lady wants a same-sex marriage, but also wants children and wants them recognised in a traditional sense. It's my understanding that two people of the same sex cannot have a biological child, so how can this situation be considered the same as other families? It appears to be having it all ways and wanting our laws because of it, regards Mary.
Well, Mary, what I would say is I don't necessarily want a traditional family, but I do want our children to be protected. And the fact of the matter is that our children have two parents. It doesn't matter that they're both female, but they do have two parents. And both of those parents are raising them, and both of those parents need to have parental rights. It doesn't matter if it comes through a birth certificate or any other sort of parental order, but we need to both be protected. And at the moment in Ireland, the only way to do that is to be on a birth cert.
Mm. Like you've mentioned posters, people on social media. What about face-to-face? Have you got any negative reaction?
Never face-to-face. No, it's always the keyboard warriors. You know, people have a lot to say when you know, I highly doubt that a lot of people would have the gall to say anything to my face. Yeah. And you know what? For the amount of positivity that we have received, it, you know, the haters are few and far between. Yeah. We've received so much support.
It's very cruel that Aria will never know who her biological father is. Why doesn't she sue the Spanish company who refused to disclose this information? That's one question. And a donor is a biological parent, says somebody else.
Yeah, and they can say that till they're blue in the face, but they're not. They're a biological donor. They are a donor. They have relinquished parental rights. They donated with no intention to ever become a parent.
How is Ava with Aria?
Absolutely loves her. I can hear them chatting away out there. They just adore each other. Yeah. They absolutely like. And if anyone who has met them knows that they are so, so happy, so surrounded by love. You know, we're raising them to be very, you know, kind and compassionate human beings. And, you know, what more can you ask for?
You probably know this, but I'm telling our listeners, the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Health began its review of the general scheme. This is the general scheme on children and family relationships. The general scheme of assisted human AHR, reproduction bill. Yes, yeah. Was anybody asked in to
talk
to them?
They spoke with LGBT Ireland, but they didn't contact us, which is, you know, unusual, because if they're looking at reciprocal IVF, we're the ones who have done it and who are kind of public about it. We weren't asked about it. But I have written to them, and hopefully I'll get a hearing with them as they kind of continue this. But the report,
that would make sense.
It would make sense.
Yes.
But the report that was published is quite disappointing, in that it doesn't cover a lot of things that need to be covered. In fact, reciprocal IVF is not even mentioned in it.
Right. Is it mentioned in some other way? No, it's just not mentioned at all.
No, it's not mentioned.
No.
I don't know. It's just, it's really disappointing. We were all waiting for it to be published, and then it was published, and it was kind of like, oh, okay, that's what they've been spending so much time on. Yeah.
I'm frustrated for you, so I can only imagine how you and Audrey feel, and other people in your similar circumstances. It is about numbers. I think it's about you know, it's not a politically sexy issue. It's not something that will garner votes for them. So as a result, there's no great pressure, no great urgency.
Yeah, absolutely. But we feel the
pressure. Meanwhile, you're in limbo.
Yeah, we absolutely feel the pressure because we're reminded of it every single day. you know, and me posting that picture of the birth cert, that's just one small thing. You know, a couple of days later, I had to sign another thing. And it's just a constant reminder that we're not in a safe position as parents.
So when the girls go to school,
yeah,
if it stays the way it is now, Audrey won't be able to sign anything as a
No. Even like Ava's in a play school and she's, you know, technically not allowed to sign anything.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the legal thing, but practically, do people recognise her as...
Oh, 100%.
Of course, yes.
100%,
course.
Yeah.
You know, but I suppose things have to be legally binding, and if anything did happen and they didn't have your signature...
Yeah. No. Yeah, totally. Like, I'm a type 1 diabetic, you know, so there's a good chance that at some point I'll be hospitalised. And if something, you know, if I was kind of incapacitated and couldn't sign something, there's no one else to sign anything for them.
Yeah, it's daft.
Yeah.
Daft, daft, daft.
I mean, you have so many people who don't want to take responsibility for their children and, you know, all you have here are two people who want to be able to care for their children. You know, we're not asking for anything else, only to be able to care for them.
The Department of Health did say, and it was a long statement, and I've read bits of it out, and I won't read it all out, but they do, I'll just read this paragraph. Given the comprehensive scope of the legislation and the ethical, legal and social issues which arise with assisted human reproduction practices, it is anticipated that certain areas of the general scheme will require further consideration and refinement during the drafting process. Issues relating to reciprocal IVF, for example, are among those which the Department of Health intends to consider as part of this process. So they're saying that they will address it in the future.
Yeah, they're saying that they will address it, but then, you know, I've also been told that even if they do address it, it might not be... legislated for retrospectively, which means that
you're still in limbo.
We're the same thing because...
And probably only those in the state.
Yeah, as opposed exactly. To exactly. State, yeah. But again, which is just so bizarre because can you imagine if they said to straight couples, you can only have fertility treatment in Ireland or you can only conceive a child in Ireland? Like the number of people that travel abroad for many different reasons or conceive outside of the state, you know...
So 4 years on... There isn't real equality and there still is discrimination.
There is, absolutely.
And it's very real.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming in, Renee.
Thank you.
Great to meet you. And somebody says here, I have a beautiful granddaughter thanks to a lovely donor. Good luck, girls, and keep going, says that person.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
For Noakt 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. It's good of Shane Ross to say he'll pay for a homecoming for Shane Lowry. Now, I'm a mother of three children. From what I've heard someone say is a traditional family. I also have been teaching young children for 25 years in lots of different social environments. In my humble opinion, all any baby, child or adult needs is security, affirmation, encouragement and most of all, love. It doesn't matter who they get it from. That's all I wish for my children, for their futures. Life is short. Love is what matters most. And from Westport. Yeah, yeah. I suppose you need security as well, don't you? And you want to be recognised in the eyes of the law, all of those things. And I suppose they're not important when you have them. They become a lot more important when you don't have them. It's sad that you can't express concerns or have reservations or question anything related to LGBT without being labelled a hater, says John. I don't think that's the case, John. I think everybody's up for an adult conversation about things. I've been listening to you with my teenage son who was very interested in your conversation. Can I just say to all negative people, not all children who live with a mum and dad live in happy environment. I myself have four children and you know none of us know what the future holds or what obstacles they will face, but I sincerely hope things will have moved forward for them in the future. And like it's a statistic that something like 33% of pregnancies are not planned. They're not planned. Now, in the case of Ava and Aria, both were much wanted, much planned. And that's a good start, isn't it? That's a good start in life. On other issues that we were talking about in the last hour, meeting at work, I met my husband 37 years ago working in Quinsworth. I was on checkouts. He was in the deli. Married since 85. Never looked back. There's a song in that. I worked on the checkout, he worked on the deli. I asked him for a wrap and he gave me a kiss. I don't know. The most beautiful beach has to be Dogs Bay in Connemara, says Kitty in Loughrea. And Morris Castle, I thought, when, as I was saying it, Morris Castle is the beach in Kilmuckridge. It's only beautiful, says Brendan. Thanks. And To the best of my knowledge, I believe that Shane Lowry is the only golfer to have won a regular European professional tournament as an amateur, a regular European professional tournament as a professional, and a World Golf Championship, and four, a major tournament. This surely is a unique collection of trophies, most unlikely to be repeated. In terms of entertainment, the only person to give him a run for his money yesterday was himself in the fields of Athenry session. He certainly knows how to celebrate a magnificent victory, says David. I think somebody pointed that out on the radio this morning. The man from Portrush said that collection of things, a regular European professional tournament as an amateur, a regular European professional tournament as and on. So yeah, he's breaking all sorts of records, is Shane Lowry. 5155 on RaidRT.ie. I think we have time for this. We do, a song, yes. Yes. Apparently over 50% of affairs start at work, says Vincent. Not anymore, Vincent, things are changing. 1 in 10 now, according to the paper yesterday. I'm a Spanish teacher and love that song, but would be mortified to work on it with my students. The translation is quite raunchy. All right. And on Shane Lowry, really impressed with Shane Lowry's interview on Saturday evening after completing his round, so much so that I used it for my sermon at Sunday Mass. A great attitude to life and to the game, says Ger. I presume Father Ger. Now I'm joined in the studio by Oisin Kiernan, who plays for Cavan. He's 25, and last year he was diagnosed with testicular cancer. Afternoon, Oisin.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
Yeah, it's sort of a mad introduction. You're famous for playing for Cavan and getting testicular cancer. Yeah. Your two claims to fame.
Yeah, it's been a crazy 10 months, I suppose. Yeah. 11 months.
You've told your story to SuperValue because SuperValue sponsored the GAA and they have this Where You're From campaign and you're part of that, so you're an ambassador for them. So you've gone very public on it.
Yeah, SuperValue have been great. I teamed up with them, but initially when I got diagnosed, I just wanted to get back playing football. That was the first thing that was in my head. And then I went for a chemotherapy, obviously. So again, it was get back playing football as soon as possible. So the SuperValue campaign is about resilience and where you're from. So it ties in well with
it. And tell us about where you're from. Bally James Duff, the club is Castlerahan,
yeah, is the club.
And
it's the parish.
You're originally from where?
Ballymanus, which is Mead, West Mead border. And, so I'm originally from there. Right. And moved down to Ballyduff about 3 years ago.
Okay.
So things have gone well.
And you got onto the Cavan panel.
Yeah, got onto the Cavan panel after we got to the county final with Castlerahan. And then I was on the Cavan panel then last year. So this is my second year on it.
And is there a lot of migration among GAA players from county to county?
I think the GAA keeps a lot of players. I know just in our club there's not too many gone at all. One, if two, tops.
I mean migration from county to county,
not out of the country. Not too much at all.
Yeah. Okay, so bring us back to last year then. You were in the middle of the championship, were you?
Yeah, with Castlerahan in Cavan, and I suppose I found I wouldn't describe it as a lump, but a kind of a divot. It was something strange, anyway. It wasn't normal. So I left it. I didn't think much of it. We were playing. I just wanted to play football and get on with things, I suppose. And about 5 weeks later, I just mentioned to my father. He has history of it, so he said to go over to the GP. So went over to the GP, and I kind of knew about the GP's reaction just from talking to him. He was examining me, obviously. He said we'll have to go get a scan on that.
And were you reluctant because it was your private parts? Was that part of it? No?
Not really.
No.
Because I'd be quite laid back, so right. Not really. I don't know if that's the case for some people, but there's no real problem with that.
You're fine with that.
Especially now, I'm well used to it now.
You just thought there was nothing to be concerned about, was it?
Yeah, I left about 5 weeks. We were playing football too, I suppose. I didn't want that to stop in the way too. So, I just left it. But it wasn't going away. I'm not sure if it was getting bigger. It definitely wasn't getting any smaller. So,
And was there any pain?
No pain whatsoever.
Discomfort?
No.
No.
Nothing.
That's what
shocked me, I suppose.
Yeah.
After going to the GP that morning, I was kind of testing myself in training to see, is there something wrong? Because I didn't feel anything wrong. And I thought I was flying, like there was nothing wrong with me, I thought, until the next day I got diagnosed.
Testicular cancer?
Yeah.
And when you say your dad has a history of it, he
had testicular cancer twice, and he had cancer in kidney as well. The kidney was most recent, but that's going back a while now, and he's fine now.
And did the doctor say that there's it's hereditary?
They're not 100% sure, but there might be some connection. They're not sure about that, but I suppose I was told to get the brothers to check them, that it just might.
Yeah.
There might be something there.
So when you got the diagnosis then, you know, the big C, cancer.
Yeah.
How did that affect you?
I think that the word probably sounds scarier than it was in my case, but it was quite calm that day. I was with my father and brother, and I think with him having it, just it was quite calm, and he was talking me through it. And obviously I rang that we were training that night, so I rang Donald Keoghan, our manager, and told him, and we had to tell the players that night.
Is he the Castlerahan or the Cavan?
He's former Cavan, but he's Castlerahan manager. So we went up then and into the dressing room just that night, and I remember telling the lads, but I kind of seeing the shock on their face and seeing their faces, that kind of hit me a bit then. Maybe this is a bit bigger than I initially first thought.
So your story reflected in their faces scared you.
Yeah, that more so.
You were fine up until then.
But it turned out it wasn't the major deal in the end, really.
But it still is cancer, you know. I'm not trying to make something of it just for the sake of radio, but cancer is cancer.
Yeah, I suppose so. I went and got the operation and the chemotherapy. I was hoping after the operation, because it's not major, you're bed bound for a couple of days, obviously, but I was back training after a few weeks, and we were in the county final then 5 weeks later, and I was probably close to get back playing, but just doctor's orders I wasn't. I was a week or two off. But then the next day after county final, I was back up in Dublin, and it had spread up into my lymph nodes in my stomach. Right. So that's when I had to get chemotherapy, and that's probably what I didn't want to hear at the time, because I see what chemo does to people and that. Mm. But
you're so young, you're sort of, you know, you're invincible, really. You're like, it's not like somebody in their 40s getting a cancer diagnosis. You're sort of thinking, this isn't going to get me.
Yeah, kind of that. And that was kind of the attitude I had. I was just going to get on with things and get it done, and whatever I had to get done and get back to normal.
And football was the big thing. On the pitch.
Football was the big focus. I suppose if I was back on the pitch, I knew I was in the clear. So, but that was the big focus. And just with the lads and the GA is just a big family, really, in the community.
So chemo then, now it's beginning to get a little bit serious for you.
I was expecting, obviously, you look up and you read about it and you see that the hair goes, obviously, and you bloat up a bit and you look pale. But a lot of the time I was all that, but I didn't feel sick. I was fine. At the start, going through the first week of chemo, I was expecting to be sick in the mornings, and there was nothing. I was completely fine. I was listening to music, and I was grand, and I was wondering, was this stuff working, or what were they putting into me? Because I didn't feel any different. But then the hair one day just fell out, and I realised, okay,
it was working.
And you
look like a man I'd be proud of his hair.
Well, it actually was very straight.
Oh, was
beforehand.
It?
Yeah.
It grew back curly.
As you can see now, it came back so curly, which is quite strange too. But
that is strange.
I've heard it does happen.
It does, it, right?
Yeah, different colour sometimes as well.
No way.
Yeah, which is
which that's is all. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, but this has come back curly, and I've never been curly.
Right.
But then as you go through chemo, I suppose the sessions accumulates and it builds up. So the second session was a small bit tougher, and then the energy starts to come down a bit, and different things like your taste buds and your hearing starts to change a small bit, but they're minor really. It wasn't that major. I kind of trained through it too. The doctor said to train through it and push the body, where years ago they said not to do that seemingly. But
so you were chemo in the morning and going to a gym then in the evening, were you?
Well, I was in Dublin for a full week of chemo. I used to go to the gym on a Wednesday night, just during the week. I would go out for walks in the evening and that, just to keep out and about and keep active. And then I was 2 weeks off, and then I'd be back in for another week. So I had 4 sessions of that.
Right.
But on the 2 weeks off, I trained with the team and done other bits and done hiking, and I was fine, like, to do all that.
And the doctor was saying, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. But as I said, I looked sick, but I didn't feel sick.
Would you have looked to people like, say, Des Bishop, who's another famous person in Ireland who's had testicular cancer? Would you have known his story? No.
I don't know too much of his story, but Ronan Flanagan, actually, on the Castlerahan team, had it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, a few years ago. And Andre Quinn, another man in the Cavan camp, the strength and condition coach. So I was on the phone to them, and I learned an awful lot for them. So anything small thing, I was just on the phone to them, asking them questions. So they were a massive help throughout it too.
Yeah. So the chemo was finished then. When do you get the all clear?
Yeah, so after the chemo, you get a scan. That was in February. I got a scan, and a month later, he actually pushed it forward a bit because I wanted to get back playing football. So I said as soon as possible. So he said we'll try again in the month then and see. So we got the scan and got the results and got the all clear then in March, early March. So that was a massive relief. In my head though, I was going to be clear. I felt good and it felt I was hoping, obviously, it felt I was working. So it was just a relief for everyone, family and friends and girlfriends that we got the all clear.
Yeah. So how does Castlerahan, they were beaten in the county final?
No, we won that county final.
Oh, you won that county final, right.
Three, we were beaten in three previous county finals.
Right, okay.
So it was a big one to get that, to win that one.
And you missed it though,
I missed it, yeah.
That's what I misread, yeah.
Yeah, no, that didn't matter to me once. I was obviously gutted before it, but once we won, it was brilliant for the lads, it was worth it.
Yeah. And what do you think of the Super 8 set up?
The Super 8?
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. Getting there is obviously where you want to be, but I think it's a very good idea, yeah. So it'll be interesting now because obviously there's one more round to play and then we're into the semi-finals, but yeah, no.
There was a great game yesterday between Kerry and Donegal, but yet Dublin sort of annihilated Roscommon.
Yeah, Dublin are so strong. It'll be interesting to see can any of the teams beat Dublin or get in terms with them.
Because what do you think?
These other teams are good, like Kerry, Donegal, Tyrone, Mayo still have a chance there too. So I think Dublin are in front. I held them and probably will win it, I think. But these teams are getting they're getting closer, I think.
Back to you. So your dad has testicular cancer, and then you said that he had kidney cancer later on. So is that a possibility for you or?
I'm not sure. They say that it increases by my chance of getting it again is like increased by 1%. So you've points. I'm not sure, but increase a very small bit. And the fact that my father had it as well, that increases it a small bit more.
And what about if you ever want to have children?
Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's all fine. Okay, yeah.
Did you ask him that, or did he tell you?
Yeah, no, probably asked him early on. But there's some questions like that and things like that come up. But I asked the question. I was fine, get through it. But that's all fine. Yeah.
So what have you learned from it now? You're saying you're laid back. Has it given you a different attitude to life?
Definitely. I think I look at the bigger picture of things more so, and just to step back and kind of look at things and not to get too bogged down in the smaller things. Not that I did too often, but definitely after this.
So you're more laid back than you were.
Yeah.
Right. What do you do for a living?
Work on a pig farm.
Right.
I didn't work now going through the whole chemo and through the sickness, but that could probably get me more time to just train away and to.
Do you have any vegan friends?
I don't have any vegan friends, right. No. that's a recent subject, actually.
You have to be able to discuss that, do you, as a pig farmer?
No, I don't get involved in it.
Do you not know?
No.
Stay out of it.
Yeah, I stay out of it, yeah.
Is it the family farm or you just work on it?
Yeah, it's my uncle's farm, yeah.
Right, okay. And what do you do on it?
So, just looking after the sows and the piglets, and they're brought up then and they go to factory, so it's a big cycle. And
They're called fatteners, aren't they, or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the ones that go to the factory, yeah.
Right. Now, we were talking to the Tullow twins, from Gogglebox last week.
Oh,
so
yes.
One of them is...
Oh, they have pigs too,
don't they?
They have
pigs.
Yeah.
Is Cavan a big county for pigs?
I think it would be, yeah. There would be quite a few pigs in Cavan, yeah.
Right, okay.
But it's interesting.
Now, the other thing, and it's a message, and I was sort of getting at it earlier on there, that men, we as men, are probably not good at stepping forward when it comes to health matters. And you reckon that if you'd gone when you noticed it first, that things might have been a little bit different.
Yeah, if I had gone, I'd say from day one, I don't think I would have... Well, I don't know, but there's probably a better chance that I wouldn't have to get chemo, which meant that I would have been back after 6 weeks, got the operation, would have been normal, back to work.
You'd have straight hair.
Yeah, straight hair. But then it spread up into my lymph node. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but... I suppose 5 weeks could have been long enough for it to spread.
Yeah, I think the message is just if you think there's something wrong, go and get it checked. What's the worst that can happen? Tell you you're okay. Like that's a good.
And these doctors are well used to. This.
I noticed a lump in one of my testicles in my mid-50s and went to the GP. The attitude was basically, "You silly old fool! Don't you know that testicular cancer is a young man's disease?" I didn't know that.
Neither did I. I don't know if that's right.
Great to hear Oisín tell his story, Ray. It should encourage all young men to check themselves regularly, even if they think they're too young to have cancer, says that person. So you're in the clear. Yeah. And Castlerahan, where are they in the county championship?
The championship starting in 2 weeks' time. Okay, right. So the league is just finished.
So you're defending champions?
Yeah, we'll go and try and defend it now again. Right, should okay. be good fun.
And Cavan aren't in the Super 8s, are they?
No. We lost out in the last round to Tyrone.
Yeah. What was the score?
I'm not sure the score in the end. It was quite a wide margin. That's the playing them teams is what you learn from. So we'll have to learn from that and push on next year.
Okay, Ocean, great to meet you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks very much, Ray.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And you can see Oisin's little piece of video on supervalue.ie where he tells the story of his diagnosis of testicular cancer. That's supervalue.ie. Oisin Kiernan, where you're from. It's their Where You're From campaign. Now, here making the cows listen to the show and enjoying the GAA cancer topic. By the way, in my experience, there are very few vegans in rural Ireland. That's from Ellen O'Neill from Talla, living in Wicklow. That's an interesting theory of yours, Ellen. And on relationships at work, Martina says, I don't know if this counts as meeting your spouse at work, but here goes. I met my husband while doing voluntary work in Ballycotton in Cork in 1985. We married in 1993. We're going back to Ballycotton for our 26th wedding anniversary for the August bank holiday weekend. Martina, lovely part of the country, and congratulations in advance. There's a lovely cliff walk down there in Ballycotton. And I've been on every single beach in Ireland, and I can tell you nowhere compares to Inch Beach in Kerry. That's Pat. I wonder if you did a vote, because we were mentioning this at the top of the show, that the Sunday Times have 50 great Irish beaches, and it's just their opinion. I wonder if you put it to a vote, which beaches would win. Inch is there. It's probably one of the biggest and the longest. And Pat says it's his favourite. Just before we go, there was great excitement in our house because Top Gun 2, it's called Top Gun Maverick, the trailer is out and 17 million people have watched it already. It's going to be in the cinemas next year, starring, of course, Tom Cruise. And some eagle-eyed fans noticed that the back of his bomber jacket, that the flags have changed. On the original one from 1986, there was the Japanese and Taiwanese flags. On this one, neither of those exist. There are nondescript emblems that aren't flags. And somebody suggests that it's because Tencent, who are a major Chinese media company, have shares in Paramount, who are making the photograph, and they nudged them to say, maybe remove those from the back of Tom Cruise's jacket. Here is where Tom Cruise meets his commanding officer, and his commanding officer... Oh, we don't have time for it. We play it tomorrow. That's it from us. Sarah McInerney is on the way, and we will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday.